Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and we are back for another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm Jason Ophir, here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry, how's it going?
Pretty good, Jason. How are you? How's it been?
Oh, it's been crazy. I've had a really busy week, work and doing all that. And you know how I'm addicted to those fruit machines, those lottery terminals, the Oregon VLT video lottery terminals, the slot machines?
Right.
Well, I have a very unhealthy addiction. It's like my most favorite thing in the world. That and taking naps and maybe tacos. But yeah, I went out today.
I love tacos. Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. But yeah, it's been great. And, we got to apologize to our audience. We had to let them down last week. But, there's always a reason why things happened the way it was. And, last week, as you know, we had Mother's Day. And, we just had some glitches with our technical difficulties at your end. And I was out of town. And our guest, Cindy Bailey Dove, it was sick. I mean, she was just brought on really, really sick, and she was just really couldn't do the show. So we want to apologize to our audience that we had to cancel last minute. But, hey, it happens for a reason, and, life doesn't sink all the time. So
I blame aliens.
I would be surprised. And, speaking of aliens, I was at the UFO conference yesterday, and I did not see Clyde Lewis because I was so busy reading for the last couple of days, but we're going to have his partner, Ron Patton. He's going to be coming on in the next couple months, so we're going to have Clive Lewis and Ron Patton both separately on our show. So I'm looking forward to that.
Very cool. And what I was saying about those video lottery terminals, yeah, I pretty much played those for 9 hours today. It's crazy.
No,
I need a life.
9 hours?
9 hours. I was up at 7 a.m. So I was winning so much. When you're winning, you can't just walk away. When you get the groove, when the universe is in line with your chi or whatever, your gambling energy. You can't walk away.
That's amazing. You need to pass on that good juju back to me, too.
Yeah, I know. Maybe it'll rub off on you.
Yes, it will. Yeah, it's all about our intention. That's great. And, I'm really excited to have a well-known, well-renowned returning guest. His name is Cliff Barachman, but it's actually Barachman, I'm sorry. And this very well known in the Bigfoot field, his research, and he's on Animal Planet. He's been on, I believe, at the History Channel, many, many radio, not only radio, but also TV stations that people would probably be very familiar with. So I'm not sure if Cliff is on yet, but has he hooked up yet?
I believe so. Let's get him on right now.
Okay.
Hey, Cliff.
Wonderful. We'll just have him on.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going great. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
This is wonderful. I'm sitting out on my front porch in the woods outside Portland, Oregon, and watching, the golden hour, right? They call it, when the light's beautiful and the sun's real low. And, yeah, so I'm just hanging out in the woods.
That's perfect.
So, I mean, nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that. You sound like me, Cliff, way out in the boonies.
Yeah, pretty much, I suppose. Yeah.
I'm jealous.
Cool.
I need to get out more.
Well, it's all about priorities, I suppose. It took me 25 years or so to buy a property out in a place I wanted to live. So I'd say persistence is more important than skill in such matters.
Maybe one day I'll be able to afford that. I'd love to have a ranch out somewhere with horses and stuff. But who knows? Maybe the universe will open up to me someday and make that possible.
Yeah, you never know. Just, focus, pay attention, and smile as much as you can. And whether it happens or not, it probably won't matter.
I'll try and smile at work.
Well, if you can't
smile,
then just grit your teeth.
Yeah.
So
now, for the benefit of the listeners, since it's been a little while since you've been on, maybe you can give kind of an extended bio of yourself.
Oh, I'm just basically a Bigfoot nerd that got lucky and ended up on Animal Planet finding Bigfoot. I was in elementary school. Well, I don't know. I mean, how far back do you want to go? I love monsters. I figured out Bigfoots are real by looking at evidence. I was an elementary school teacher. I eventually ended up on some TV show. And I'm still doing the Bigfoot thing 25 years later. And it's kind of a very condensed and surface version of it, but it's all the truth, you know. I'm just a Bigfoot guy, and I'm lucky enough to be able to do this. I have been lucky enough to be able to do this for a living for the last, like, 6 or 7 or 8 years or something like that, through the television program and just public speaking events and expeditions and whatever else I'm up to. So, yeah, I'm just a Bigfoot guy.
So you, in childhood, that's when you first became interested?
I'm sorry. Let's try that again. You guys were talking very over one line.
Yeah, that's one of the problems is we're not together. We're kind of at two different locations, and there's a slight delay. But so your interest in the Bigfoot and crypto stuff started in childhood?
Well, I mean, when I was a kid, I was interested in monsters. You know, Bigfoot, Godzilla, Frankenstein, you name it. And to me at the time when I was like 6 or 7 or 8, Bigfoot was just another one of those monsters on TV because I was watching In Search Of and Legend of Boggy Creek and all those good things back in the 70s. But, you know, and I've always been quirky and unusual and eccentric and weird. And then eventually my weird interests led me to read scholarly articles and whatnot by anthropologists about the subject. And it started becoming more and more in focus that Sasquatches were, in fact, a real animal species and not just some sort of weird hullabaloo, urban myth sort of thing, or really rural myth, more appropriately. And I was already backpacking and stuff, so I figured, okay, well, I'm just going to put this on my list of things to do out in the woods, because at the end of the day, Bigfooting is essentially camping with a purpose. So that was about 25 years ago, and I've been basically drowning in the subject ever since. Rarely a day goes by that I don't do something squatchy. So.
Well, that's awesome. You can do what you enjoy. Now, I've spent a ton of time out in nature. I've never seen anything strange. But I imagine Oregon in the Northwest, isn't that kind of a hot spot for Bigfoot?
Well, Sasquatch is like all other large mammals, more or less have a continent-wide distribution within the habitat of their choice. You know, obviously moose, like the colder regions, so they're found up in that area. Black bears, they're kind of akin to black bears in that way. Like black bears have a very wide distribution and historically even wider, really. And Bigfoots are the same sort of thing. So large mammals like that, that's what you expect of. So the Pacific Northwest, I mean, that's everybody equates Sasquatches with the Pacific Northwest, probably because there is so much habitat out here. But at the same time, they are a continent-wide sort of, or at least certainly North American, Canada and United States and Alaska and whatnot, they are prevalent here. This is their habitat. They live in – there are recorded sightings in all 50 states except for Hawaii, so 49 states. So no matter where you happen to live in the world, there's probably some good habitat nearby that has produced sightings at one time or another.
How about at your place, Sherry? You're kind of out there. Have you heard anything weird?
I'm not sure. You know, what are they, Cliff, what kind of, are they exactly just in forested areas or are they, does it vary?
It varies. I mean, there's always cover. I mean, what you're looking for with this type of this species or any other species are the three magic ingredients, which is food, water, cover. And that's really about it, you know. So Sasquatches being highly intelligent and very adaptable and omnivores, they can actually live in a lot of places that other animals can't, you know, because they've learned to adapt, whether it's, raiding farmer supplies of, you know, corn and whatever else they're growing, or the various animals that live by there, like whether they're eating possums or deer or moose babies, of course, or elk or, you know, whatever. Seals, they've been seen eating seals and things like that.
Wow.
So they're very adaptable. So wherever there's enough food to support a large mammalian omnivore like this, you can probably count on having a Sasquatch sighting or two in the historical records at some point. It really all comes down to suitable habitat, which I think is one of the arguments for their existence. You know, if you haven't seen one and you're still relying on evidence, whether or not they're real, they when you look at where the sighting reports happen, you see that it's a geographic phenomenon. It's not a demographic phenomenon at all. It doesn't matter about the kinds of people that see these things or report these things. It matters where those people are, just like you would expect from a perfectly normal biological animal. And that's the case here. Unless people who go to the mountains and forested areas are better liars than people who live in deserts and flatlands, which seems ridiculous to me. It seems more reasonable that these things are just a perfectly normal species of mammal that live in certain habitats, and that's where they're seen.
Is there a problem with misidentification? I recall hearing somewhere that some people have misidentified, like a bear standing on its hind feet as Sasquatch. I imagine, you know, the way we are as people, we perceive things differently, and our minds can get easily tricked. Is that a big problem when you're investigating these things, kind of trying to determine, you know, if it's legit or not, or if it's just a misperception?
Yeah, I think misidentifications are probably the number one culprit for when people say they saw something but actually didn't. Hoaxes are also kind of prevalent, but not as prevalent as misidentifications. Perhaps I'm just naive, because I'm an honest person is the thing. You know, I don't go around lying, and so I kind of see myself in others. I assume most people are generally honest, good people. And, you know, from my experience, that's true. Of course, there's bad seeds everywhere. But so I don't think people are out there, most people. There are some psychopaths and other weirdos and tricksters and, you know, just angry, you know, troll sort of folks who go around lying and saying they've seen things or trying to get people to, you know, investigate or pay them attention or because whatever psychological issues they may have. But by and large, the vast majority of people who report things are, if they're telling the truth and they did not see a Bigfoot, then they're just misidentifying something. Bears aren't really a big culprit for that, though, is the problem. Sometimes though, because bears have ears on the top of their head and they have a long snout, and Sasquatches don't have either of those features. And also Sasquatches are universally reported to have wide shoulders, and bears don't have that either. So the most common misidentification, I imagine, would be a Sasquatch or a bear down on all fours. And certainly Sasquatches do run on all fours. So I think a lot of times, heck, I'm willing to say that a lot of times people misidentify Sasquatches as bears when they're down on all fours. I think that misidentification thing is prevalent, and it goes both directions.
That makes sense. I wish I had seen
everything about the species does, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've spent so much time. I wish I had run into anything, but I can't say that I have. But I know that there's people out there. I mean, the level of fakery, not just Bigfoot, but everywhere else in the paranormal, is just, it's out of control, and it really does a disservice when you're trying to figure out UFOs or Bigfoot or anything else.
Yeah. You know, and that serves as a repellent, basically, for the people who we want to be looking into this subject or in any of these weird subjects, right? I don't really view the Bigfoot thing as paranormal or weird in any way. It's just biology, as far as I'm concerned. But like, we want anthropologists and biologists and whatever to be investigating this. And the prevalence of hoaxery people of being incorrect about what they've seen, or people making wide-eyed claims about these things riding UFOs or something, all that sort of stuff does is drive the people away whom we want to be involved in the subject. And it's really unfortunate because this subject is worthy of investigation, and it's right on our doorstep. And it's something – that's what got me into this. You know, I've always loved weird things and stuff, but, okay, UFOs, right? What am I going to know about UFOs? Sit on a cornfield and wait around, right, and look up a lot. But with Bigfoot, I can actually go do something. Like, I can go to where they were reported before. I can do biological controls and whatever, and then see if one comes around and do stuff. I felt I was much more empowered with the Bigfoot thing as opposed to just the happenstance of the other weird stuff that I thought was fun at the time, you know. And we want scientists to be involved with this. That's a goal, I would think, of the community to some degree, for the subject to be taken seriously. The hoaxing and misidentifications and the other zealots in various ways, they do a disservice to the subject, unfortunately. But, you know, there's a bunch of good people doing good work, gathering good data, and hopefully that will be reflected in the historical records after all this mystery stuff is said and done.
So your take is that, is it kind of just an undiscovered creature, or, you know, just a super rare organic creature that we haven't really been able to study? That's kind of what I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and what they're called, what is called a relict hominoid. Two fancy pants words that are pretty simply defined. Hominoids are the family, is the family that we're in, great apes and human beings and ancestors thereof. Okay. And then relict is a biological term that means basically surviving in small numbers, though they were probably once more numerous. And so that, like, small little segments, like, for example, the coelacanth fish, there's two populations, maybe three now, if I have to double check that, but two small populations of these fish in the world, you know, off of Madagascar, and there's another one in Indonesia. There's probably another, but I can't remember. And so, but they used to be much more widely spread throughout the world's oceans. So that would be an example of a relic population. Again, they were once widely spread, and now they survive only in small areas. And that's what we're talking about here. Hominoids, or in this case, I believe hominin, which is a specific word that means human ancestors and their offshoots of that, since chimpanzees and humans shared a common ancestor about 6 or 8 million years ago. Those are all hominins. So what we have here is a relict hominin. There's been a ton of hominins over the last 8 million years, quite a few of them. And now we know that some of them persisted until quite recently. Who's to say that a very small number of those species haven't persisted until present day? And Sasquatches would represent one of those.
Mm. Now, with the reports that you get, is there how big are they? What sizes are being reported? Because the ones I've heard of, I mean, are they like 7-8 feet tall? Obviously, they have big foot. I would assume big feet. I would assume.
Well, yeah, I mean, big, just, but calling them Bigfoot, and Dr. Rover Krantz talked about this, calling them Bigfoot kind of gives, like, overemphasizes just one part of their anatomy. And when they have a generally large anatomy, and, you know, their hands are large, their heads are large, their shoulders are large, you name it, they're big animals. If you take all the sighting reports, which are horribly unreliable, by the way, I should say that sighting reports, when people give height or weight estimates, they're notoriously wrong most of the time. But based on that very loose data, which is the only data we have because we haven't, you know, had one stand against a police line yet, you know, and see how tall they are. But it seems that they're grouped into two basic sizes, one about 8 feet and one about 6 or 7 feet, somewhere in there, which makes sense because they're primates. That's obvious. We can tell by looking at them that they're primates. And primates, including human beings, because we're primates, have what's called a sexual dimorphism, which basically means dimorph means two shapes. Sexual means, you know, gender, boy and girl. So men and women are different sizes, you know, and that's the males and female gorillas are different sizes. And that seems also to be true for Sasquatches. Makes sense because that's true of all the great apes. And so the big males kind of clock out around 8 or 9 feet. The females seem to average maybe 6 or 7, somewhere in there. But then again, you have these people who say, oh, that was huge. It had to be 10 feet tall. But the problem with seeing a Sasquatch and getting a good estimate on it is that, well, number one, people are terrible at sizes and distances and all that sort of stuff, unless you've specifically been trained, like military folks or cops or something. But also, they're just large animals. Like, for example, the Patterson-Gimlin film subject, the very famous film Walking Across the Sandbar in Bluff Creek, she's only about 6.5 feet tall. She's not excruciatingly large in that way, and tall, that is. But her shoulders are 32 to 34 inches wide, which is a good 6 or 8 inches past my own. I'm guessing mine are about 28 inches. I don't know. But maybe they're a lot less, actually. I have no idea. But I should probably measure. I'm at my garage. But anyway, she's just a large, large animal. You know, she looks like a barrel on two legs. So when people see these animals and see the way they move, they immediately, intuitively realize these are massive, massive animals. And so I think they exaggerate the size estimates that they give because of that. So I don't know if that answered your question or not. I mean, I know you were looking for, about 7.5 feet. But, you know, like most biology, these things, my answers might be long and rambling, but there's a lot of information I need to put in there. So.
Well, I'd imagine that, you know, there's some variability involved with sizes too. But I wouldn't want to tangle with a 6 to 7 foot female Bigfoot, that's for sure.
No, you wouldn't want to tangle with a 3 or 4 foot chimpanzee either. They had the strength of
that's
eight times
true.
A human being. Yeah, and you know, and don't forget, every 8 or 9 foot Sasquatch starts off as a 2 or 3 footer, you know, and grows up that big. So you would expect, and indeed you have, and in sighting reports, reports of these things being all sizes in between, you know, the big maximum and minimum. So
I've talked to people in the past that go really far out there with Bigfoot, like saying that, no, they're not real creatures like you're saying. They're like interdimensional beings. They're aliens. People have seen UFOs drop them off and stuff like that. I'm very more inclined to go with your direction on what they are. I do believe things can be undiscovered. To me, though, just with this one in particular, I just would have thought that there would have been more concrete evidence, a body. And I know we talked about this before, but since there might be somebody new listening, I always felt as if that there somebody would run across a body or something like that. But then again, I don't know if it was you we were talking to before where they could bury their dead and then, you're never going to find a body. So
it's possible they could bury their dead. I mean, there are some hominins that did. We know Neanderthals did, for example. I wouldn't expect these guys to do so, but it's possible. And from what I understand about just the way animals die and like how the forest recycles the bodies and stuff, I don't think there's any need for that explanation. I think that the rarity of the species and the fact that Sasquatches, like all the other apex, actually get to choose where they die. They may not know they're dying. They just think they're ill, and they kind of hide their body away at a certain spot because they think they're sick. And then one day they die instead of getting better like they have every other time in their life, because, you know, all animals get colds or flus or eat something bad and barf it up, or, you know, all animals get sick. But one day they die. And remember, prey species like deer and elk and rabbits, they don't get to choose where they die. You know, they're brought down by a mountain lion or a bear or a Bigfoot or whatever kills them at wherever they happen to be. But mountain lions and bears and Bigfoots and other apex predators, nothing really hunts and kills them. So when they get ill, they probably hide themselves away in some thick brush somewhere, and one day they die. And within a few hours to a few days, the scavengers move in and disperse the body parts around. You know, coyotes or bears or weasels drag an arm over there and a leg over there and stuff. So the meat's taken care of pretty quick. The hair's eaten away by moths. And bones are actually eaten by the most common animal in North America, by biomass. All you biology folks out there who know what biomass. The most common animal by biomass in North America is the deer mouse. And they eat bones. Mice eat bones, just like wood rats and porcupines and coyotes and bears and deer. Deer eat bones. In fact, last year before, there was a fantastic video from one of these body farms. I don't know if you know what a body farm is.
For the
listeners who don't. Body farms are like if you leave your body to science after you die, one of the places it can go is one of these forensic schools, like forensic outdoor schools kind of, but instead of like sixth grade camp, it's a little more gruesome. They put your body outside in the woods or submerged in water or any number of scenarios, and then forensic scientists and police officers and whatnot can.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Did we lose you, Cliff?
I don't know.
Yeah, you kind of dropped off there. You might have to call back, or maybe it's intermittent cell reception.
Did you call back in? Because I just heard a click.
The call just dropped, so I'm sure I'll call right back in.
Okay.
So I don't remember, Sherry, do you believe in Bigfoot?
I believe that they do exist. I really do. I mean, it's just a matter of being out there at the right time in the right place and being a witness. It's just like being, you know, do you believe in ghosts? Well, a lot of people don't actually see them, but I know there's ghosts out there, but no, I believe that there is a Bigfoot. It's just, you know, they're so elusive. It's very interesting.
Hey, I'm back, by the way. Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries.
Okay, go ahead, Cliff.
Oh, yeah, just to finish my thought. Basically, I was going on, but, I mean, the woods recycle the bones. They're eaten, they're dispersed, and, you know, it's very possible that people have found bones, but, you know, if you're wading through the Salal in the Pacific Northwest and you come across a femur bone that's 2.5-3 feet long, are you going to assume it's an elk? Or are you going to say, hey, I've got a Bigfoot bone and I have $2,500 ready to go right now for a DNA test willing to prove it? You know, how many people are going to do that? Not very many.
I remember, I don't know who I was talking to a while ago. It might have been you when I brought up the question of, you know, how come we don't have better evidence? How come we haven't found a body? And it may have been you. They presented me with the thought of, well, have you ever found a dead bear out in the wild? Actually, no. And I've spent a lot of time out there, and I've never seen a dead bear. I've seen bones and stuff, but I don't know what they are. So that was a good point to whomever told me that, because it's true. I haven't seen a bear, you know, corpse out in the wild. So maybe that's just the case with the Bigfoot. It's just, like you're saying, it just gets eaten by mice or whatever.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it was Dr. Grover Krantz's book that says that if every buffalo corpse had just deteriorated into bones and were still there, the entire Midwest would be 3 feet deep in bones at this point. You know, and nature recycles. You know, nothing is wasted. And Sasquatches are part of nature, perfectly normal animal, and they are decomposed and used just like every other dead animal. And also consider the rarity of the species. There has to be maybe like 100 bears or something for every one Bigfoot. They're a very rare species. And considering you don't really find bear bones, you would expect to find Sasquatch bones at maybe 1% of the frequency of bear bones.
So, Cliff, they aren't extinct?
I'm sorry, can you ask again, please?
I said, is Sasquatch, Bigfoot, are they extinct?
Oh, no, not at all. They subsist in very low numbers. But no, they're not extinct at all. And as far as I can tell, I don't see any real reason to think that they're threatened by low numbers, low population numbers. I think that their habitat is threatened, and therefore probably small population groups of Sasquatches might run into some trouble genetically, especially at the rate we're paving things, you know, particularly in places like maybe Florida or, you know, places like that. But no, there's no reason to think that Sasquatches are endangered at this point, although I think that, you know, they could be, but I just don't see that at this point. But I could be very wrong. It'd be sad to find out, but I could be wrong on that one.
How far back does the record go for Bigfoot? You know, like I watch occasionally like Ancient Aliens, where there's, you know, cave drawings that they say are aliens and all stuff like that. Is there a history that goes back hundreds or thousands of years where people have documented and reported seeing these creatures?
Yeah, there is actually. Every Native American and First Nations tribe in North America that lives in suitable habitat has Sasquatches or something fitting that description in their oral tradition. Generally, in the same way that they have like bear and coyote and raven and everything else. So their oral tradition is rich with sighting reports of these things. It's not like, you know, I was out, you know, fishing and I saw one. It's these are animals are part of their lore and part of their traditions and history and religious mythology and things like that. You know, so the oral tradition, goodness knows how far back that goes. Who knows how far back it goes. But as far as things that are written down, well, that's a little problematic because North American natives did not have a written language. The Mayans did, of course, but these aren't. I'm not aware of anything down there about Sasquatches. But there are, what are they called, pictographs, which are drawings on cave walls throughout the Four Corners area that seem to depict very, like, animals with very, very large feet, and there's also men in those, human beings in those same pictographs and whatever. There's also the hairy man pictographs from the southern Sierra Nevada mountains. Those have been dated by archaeologists to be between 800 and 1,500 years old. And that's an interesting case because it's located on the Tule Indian Reservation in a place called Painted Rock. And the Tule Indians are the only tribe that we know of that have Sasquatches as part of their creation story. Very briefly, their creation story goes something like Coyote and Bigfoot, or Hairy Man, as they call them. Coyote and Hairy Man were having an argument about how to create the other animals. And Coyote, who's a trickster and he's always up to no good, wants to create the animals walking on all four legs, and then Hairy Man wants animals to walk on two legs like him. And so to solve this dispute, they decide to have a race, a foot race. And so they race against each other, and Coyote cheats because that's the kind of guy Coyote always is. He's a cheater and a trickster. So he cheats, and that's why the animals walk on four legs, you know, bears and deer and stuff. But then Hairy Man, being as intelligent a species as he is, figures out pretty quick that he's been cheated, and he starts crying. And human beings spring of Hairy Man. So that's actually their story of how people were created. We sprang from the tears of Hairy Man. And just like every other native story of any animal, whether it's coyote or bear, or in this case, Hairy Man or Bigfoot, the story gives hints and little nuggets, I guess, of their natural behaviors. Because after Hairy Man, who's very, very intelligent, that's one of the one of the characteristics of Sasquatches as well as Hairy Man, figures out that he's been cheated, he says, screw all this, and he goes and lives amongst the redwoods in like the mid-range of the Sierra Nevada Mountains, and in the ferns and the redwoods, and only comes out at night so he can avoid people. Well, Sasquatches are largely nocturnal, and there you have that little nugget in a Native American story about Sasquatches, as well as their preferred habitat and their intelligence level. So, so there's a long history of Sasquatch reports, and the Native folks who live in North America have been interacting with them for as long as they've both been here.
It's all very fascinating to me. I hope one day that there will be conclusive evidence, or is there a conclusive evidence? Has there ever been like confirmation through DNA that, hey, this is a new species?
No, there hasn't. What's missing right now is a dead one, and that's sad but true, which is why I don't strongly advocate for proving the species is real, because like I'm a compassionate man. I used to like be firmly in the camp, let's go kill one of these things and get it over with. But at this point, I've been learning about these animals for 25 years now, and a level of compassion has arisen in me that I don't think it's worth it, because, you know, just to prove that I'm right, or, you know, that, they are real. I mean, I know they're real. I don't care what other people think. So I can't really advocate for proving it. And anybody who does advocate for proving the species as real is advocating for a dead one. There's no other way around it. People say, oh, well, DNA testing and stuff. And there is a really interesting DNA study going on right now. I can mention in a minute. But even if intriguing and positive DNA evidence did come back, such an unexpected species like the Sasquatch would really not be widely accepted by anthropologists and biologists until a dead one, a type specimen or a holotype, they're called, comes in. But there is some hope. Perhaps it doesn't need to. There are two other species that so far they've been deemed not necessary to have a holotype, and that would be human beings, although some argue that Linnaeus himself, the guy who made up the taxonomic system, is the holotype for human beings. And there's also a species of monkey, apparently, that was deemed too rare to sacrifice even one. But again, Sasquatches, they live in North America. They live, you know, outside of Seattle, Washington. They are an unexpected species, and I just don't see any other way around it, even after positive DNA evidence comes in, that the scientists are going to go out and they're going to kill a couple of these things for study. And that's the sad truth. But anybody who it's naive to think otherwise. And trust me, I'm not pro-kill. I don't want to see a dead one of these things. But I also realize that they're real animals, and that will, in fact, happen someday.
I know that there was a documentary a couple of years ago. I want to say it was called Shooting Bigfoot. I haven't seen it, where supposedly they shot a Bigfoot like on camera. I take it that was all nonsense. I don't know if you are familiar with that.
I don't know. I don't know which one that is. That might have been the guy who claims to have shot a mother and a couple young in the Sierra Nevada Mountains. Does that ring? Does that ring a bell to you?
I think it was in Texas, and. Like I said, I didn't see the documentary.
There's a series called Killing Bigfoot. Maybe you're thinking of that.
No,
in this case, those guys, the Gulf Coast guys, again, it's a TV show, so take it with a grain of salt. And, you know, I work on TV, so I understand what I'm talking about. finding Bigfoot, we weren't really doing that. We weren't trying to kill anything, and we weren't acting, we weren't playing things up as so many other television shows seem to do. And I haven't seen the show, so I can't speak to it, but you know, it's kind of fortunate that way that we're not we weren't really put on the spot to create a bunch of you know, ruckus and get attention and you know, and lie basically, like so many other televisions and their television shows end up doing.
Yeah, no, it was a documentary, and there was the shooting. It was at night, and I guess somebody was attacked. But I don't believe anything on television. I'm gonna Google it right now because now it's bothering me.
I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it. And certainly, if there was a dead one, I would know about it. So.
Yeah, I imagine it was all nonsense because all those shows are nonsense, anyways.
Yeah, pretty much.
Chris, do you have a lot of people coming in and submitting supposedly Bigfoot, and it could be gorillas or anything like that? Do you actually go and look and analyze these photos or film?
Oh, sure. Yeah, all the time. In fact, just this past week, I think I've got, but again, the vast majority are misidentifications. The most common thing I get are people saying, yeah, I was out there taking pictures, and I didn't even see it till I got home. And inevitably it's some sort of blob squatch or play of shadows or what we call pareidolia. Pareidolia is a psychological term. It's a human tendency to see familiar shapes in things. Like when you look at a cloud and see horses, that's an example of pareidolia. Obviously they aren't horses, right? They're clouds. But when you take pictures of the woods, there's all sorts of shadows and stuff. And, you know, and a lot of people say, oh, there's a Bigfoot and its juvenile or a mother and its young back there. And it's one thing if they saw it and it went back there and they're trying to take pictures, but the vast majority of these people don't notice the figure until later. And I get a lot of that sort of stuff, and I try to be as polite and kind as I can and say, I don't see anything in there. Maybe you got something, but there's nothing in here of, you know, informational value. But the bottom line, that's most of the stuff I get. Sometimes I get really intriguing pictures that you can't tell what it is. Some guy just sent me one this past week from the Redwoods of a big, seemingly furry, dark shape up about 25 feet in a tree. Maybe it's a bear. Maybe it's a Bigfoot. I don't know. Maybe it's a play of shadows. There's not enough information in it. But, yeah, I get a lot of stuff all the time for people because, you know, I was the evidence analyst on the show, and that is kind of my passion. I like analyzing real data, real evidence, and seeing if there's anything of value that I can squeeze out of it. So I get a lot of that sort of stuff on a regular basis.
So so that documentary I was talking about was in 2013, and I'm looking at who was in it. I'm not going to mention their name, but it was that guy that was touring the country with what he reported to be a Bigfoot. So I imagine.
Oh, that. You know, he admitted that was a hoax. And if I remember right, I don't pay that much that close attention, but if I remember right, he was also gloating over the gullibility of the Bigfoot community with that whole
thing.
Yeah. But because that was, I think, the
he did that
time he tried to pull something like that.
Yeah, he did it twice, and yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, I imagine it. I'm going to see if I can watch this documentary. I'm just curious, but I'm sure, like you said, you would have heard about it if it was legit.
Yeah, and I heard all about that. That was not legit. Yeah, absolutely not. But the thing is, with the success of Finding Bigfoot, a whole bunch of new people are on the scene. Like, a whole bunch of people want to try their hand at Bigfoot, and they don't have the benefit of being in the game for, you know, a decade and a half. And seeing all these hoaxes and hoaxers kind of go by in waves, because that gives these people who are serial hoaxers and whatnot a new crop of people to try to pull one over on. So they wait a little while, then more people show up, and then they can try the same old stuff, and maybe it'll work on this batch of people too. And that's unfortunately, I think, what happened with that whole thing. If it's even what I'm thinking of, which I think it is, but
yeah,
in my opinion.
So now when you're going out and you're looking for Bigfoot, what are some of the things that you're taking notice of? I know I've heard a lot of things where people are hearing strange calls at night. Are you looking for broken, you know, broken branches high up? Like, what are some of the things as an investigator when you're out there in the field that kind of indicate that there could potentially be the presence of a Bigfoot?
Well, first of all, I try to take note of everything, whether that's the presence of a Sasquatch or not. The presence of other animals is one of the biggest factors, I believe. And that can go both ways, actually. Sometimes when Sasquatches are around, there's a woman up in Washington that I speak with every, so often, because she's lived at this spot all her life, and she has Bigfoots cruising through her property about every 2 or 3 years. They come around for a couple of weeks and then they leave. And this has been happening since she was a little girl. And she tells me, I always know when they're around because all the raccoons and possums disappear because they're eating them. You know, Sasquatches are eating those things. And so, but at the same time, when I'm out in the woods in a certain area or any area, and I want to know if I think Bigfoots might be around, I'm always listening for the presence of indicator species like bears and mountain lions or coyotes, really. And owls, and I want a forest that's teeming with life, and I think that is a good indicator of the possible presence of Sasquatches, because Sasquatches eat most of those things, and they're also eating the things that those other animals are eating. So the more biodiversity in an area, the better the habitat for a Sasquatch. As far as if they're around or not, certainly sounds are a good indicator, especially at night, like a knocking. Because animals like woodpeckers, for example, could knock during the day, or, deer and elk can rattle their antlers and whatever. But strong, what we call power knocks or things like that, is a real strong indicator that Sasquatches might be nearby. Their vocalizations, they sound a lot like people in some ways, and sometimes not very much like people. They have a wide array of vocalizations that they can produce, probably almost as wide a variety as you and I, really. So those sort of noises are a good indicator that they might be around. Sometimes tree breaks might be interesting, particularly like small branches that are broken in the upwards direction. But they're very, very subtle, and most people would never even notice those things. I don't really look for stick structures and all that sort of stuff, because to my knowledge, there never has been a one-to-one correlation between stick structures and Sasquatches. And what I mean by that, people find these teepee things in the woods and all these other things and whatever, and then they attribute them to Sasquatches. And maybe Bigfoots do that. But I'm not there yet, because of all the behaviors that have been reported for Sasquatches, like banging on trees or yelling or killing deer or any number of these things, there have been sighting reports that say that the witness says that they've seen the animal do that. To my knowledge, there has never been a sighting report where somebody says they saw a Sasquatch making a teepee structure. So I'm dubious that they do that, although it's possible. So there's some of the things that I might look for out in the woods, and some of the things I don't look for out in the woods when I'm Bigfoot, and just to see if they're around. But gosh, they're so subtle. They're so good at what they do. There usually is no sign at all that they're there.
So I would take it that looking for Bigfoot in Death Valley probably wouldn't be the best place to go. You want something with diversity and a lot of animal life and stuff like that.
Well, yeah. But where did you suggest to not look? You said
Death Valley.
Oh, Death Valley. No, of course not. Because Death Valley is a very, very hot area. And you just look at the morphology of the animal. All desert animals are very, very small, because that helps them radiate heat out to their environment. It's something called Bergman's rule. So again, you tip on something more biological about Sasquatches. Bergman's rule is a rule that states that the colder the climate, the larger the animal, even within a species. So black bears in British Columbia are going to be bigger than black bears that live in Mexico. And that's because their large animals have a greater mass. That mass in mammals produces heat. However, the mass increases faster than the surface area of the animal does. And that's important because mammals can only radiate their heat through their surface area, right? That makes sense. Their heat's made on the inside, and to get on the outside of their body, it has to go through their surface area, their skin. It turns out mass increases exponentially faster than surface area does. And so an animal like a Sasquatch has a huge mass. It creates a lot of heat and also retains a lot of heat. So they are not desert animals. Desert animals are all small. These things live in colder areas, not exclusively, but colder areas in general, which is partly the reason they have such a great size.
Have they been detected at night with thermal imaging?
Have I detected them at night? Is that what you asked?
Hmm?
Yeah, I sure have. My only sighting, in fact, has been through a thermal imager. I saw one back in 2011 in North Carolina in Uwari National Forest, and it was only because of the thermal imager that I was able to see the thing. And of course, there was some concern for a long time because polar bears are rumored to not be very visible in thermal imagers because they have such efficient insulation from their hollow hairs that cover their entire body. And there was some question for a while, like, I wonder if Bigfoots are going to be able to be seen on thermal imagers. But after thermal imagers dropped in price and a few number of people got a hold of these things, very slowly the footage started coming in. And now there's a small number, probably about four or five, of decent clips of Bigfoots on thermal imagers. So we know that they can be seen, and their insulation is not so perfect as to not let heat escape at all. And, of course, I saw one through it. I didn't record it, but I did, in fact, see one through there. And, in fact, I did an expedition just 2 weeks ago, or last weekend, actually, and my participants got to see one in a thermal imager. So it was kind of neat. So I'm very thankful that they're perfectly normal animals like that.
Oh, very cool. Now, if we have listeners, and I know we do, in the Northwest, and they want to go on a camping trip and have the highest likelihood of maybe encountering one of these creatures, are there any particular hot spots up here in particular, or is it pretty much anywhere in the remote Northwest you can have a shot?
It doesn't even have to be that remote, honestly. That's a big misconception. And, of course, if you go remotely, like if I go to the middle of the Roaring River Wilderness or, you know, the Bull Run Wilderness or something, the Bigfoots out there are probably, well, perhaps they are a little bit more curious about the humans who might go in the area and therefore maybe perhaps are more willing to come close and check us out just because there are so few humans in those areas. Whereas the ones that live like out by, you know, rhododendron or something out here on the Highway 26, they see people a lot, so they're probably very wary of us. But they're right there. You don't have to go in the middle of nowhere to see a Bigfoot. Think about sighting reports. Sighting reports are, you need a Bigfoot, and you also need a person. And most of those people are not out in the middle of some wilderness area backpacking. Most of those people are driving. And about half of the sighting reports happen along roads at night, basically. And I think that's a great way to see one. Get a dash cam and go drive in, you know, lonely roads at night in the wee hours and go check out what happens. You don't need to go very far, certainly.
It just so happens I have a dash cam. I don't even have to go do that.
No, it's a great way to go Bigfooting. You stay warm, you listen to some tunes, and you just drive and check out, and you might see some animals too, and maybe even a Bigfoot. So it's a wonderful way to go Bigfooting. You can even bring snacks.
Have you ever heard anything strange out at your place, Sherry?
No, not that I know of. That'd be quite interesting.
Well, where do you live? Where do you live?
I live in a very forested area. It's very heavily dense forested area outside of Banks. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Banks. Sure, your stuff happens out there.
I live in a valley, and there's just nothing but national. There's nothing but forestry land. So, and I live in a body of water. So, I hear things at night, but I've never thought maybe there might be Bigfoot. You just never know, you know.
Well, yeah, stuff happens out there. I think you said Banks, and there's certainly sighting reports on that whole stretch of the Coast Range out there. So, yeah, there's
seriously,
nothing wrong with
how about
there.
In Forest Grove?
Oh, yeah, sure. Out there, what is that? What is that lake? Is it Gales Lake, or what is that lake out there?
Hag Lake?
Hag Lake, yeah, right. Yeah. That one actually has sighting reports around it, and Tillamook is a great area out there. My sister-in-law's sister used to live out in Buxton. Some of their neighbors reported to have seen one out there. Gales
really?
Creek has a bunch of sightings.
I'm a runner, so I run out of Buxton when I was training for a marathon. So, yeah, it's all, that's where we're at. That's where our place is. It's just way, you know, it's kind of remote, but it's beautiful out here. So you never know, you know. It's amazing how, you know, there's a lot of wildlife and things.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of great stuff happens out there, certainly, yeah.
I just assumed you had to go out in the middle of nowhere, but it sounds like you could just be having a picnic at Hag Lake and get a sighting.
Yeah, you know, if it's at night, I think it's probably a better chance because most animals, even bears, wouldn't come cruising down the lake with a bunch of people around. Bears are very, very elusive as well. And Sasquatches would be expected to be equally so or even far more elusive and then wary of the people. But certainly anomalous sightings like, you know, daytime sightings in areas like that do occur. They're just animals after. They're real, real smart. But, you know, they're animals and they do make mistakes, just like people or bears or anything else. So
where do they hide? Do they have their dens just like a bear? What would you think, Cliff? I'm just curious.
Well, I mean, bears really only den down during the winter months. I think for the most part, they're generally nomadic and they cruise from where their food resources are until they deplete them. Then they move to another food resource. And I think that's kind of the model we use for Sasquatches as well. They may utilize things like overhangs or, you know, caverns under logs or some cage or something or mines temporarily, but there's no reason to think that they set up long-term in those sort of fields at this point. People do find possible nests and whatnot occasionally that might be attributed to Sasquatches, but those would probably be used for something else besides just night-to-night sleeping, like maybe a birthing area or... Who knows? Maybe that's where they go to die. I have no idea. But I'm not a Bigfoot expert. You know, I'm a learner like everybody else. I just may have a little bit more experience than other people. There are no Bigfoot experts because so little is known about these things. But as far as I can tell, they're like bears in that they just kind of go to food resource. They probably hunker down and take the best shelter they can for the night, just like all the other apes. They probably make a brief nest or something like that. I mean, even humans make nests. I mean, what do you think making your bed is? It's basically making a nest. It's an ape behavior that persists in our species. So they probably do something similar with the vegetation, and in the morning or the nighttime comes, they get up and keep on cruising, doing whatever they do.
I love that you referred to beds as nests. So now that's stuck in my brain. So every time I look at my bed or make the bed, I'm gonna think of a nest. Oh, I'm making my nest.
Yeah, you pretty much are. That. I mean,
totally.
There's this level of hubris with us that we think we're so different. We think we're so special, and really our specialness comes from our ability to destroy and dominate, and that's not a very charming attribute. But we are essentially apes, and our behaviors reflect that. And those of us that feel we're so much above that, take a good look at your behavior. Read a book called A Naked Ape, and then look at yourself from an anthropological point of view, and you realize that many of our behaviors are present in the great apes. It's just that they may manifest themselves slightly different. Like we make a bed. They pull down foliage to sleep on. It's not that dramatically different. And I think that that's an important lesson for us humans so we can kind of retake our place in the ecology of the planet and maybe stop ruining it at such a quick pace.
You know, when you just said that, Cliff, when you're talking about pulling down leaves or branches and things, if we didn't have houses and everything, we'd probably be doing the same thing, correct?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. A blanket or a padding of ferns, man, there's not much of a difference. One grows and, you know, one doesn't.
Absolutely. Wow.
So we have...
That's the neat thing about Sasquatches, by the way. It's just like, because I think the Sasquatches, they call them hairy man, they call them wild men, they have all these names, but they are kind of an intermediary between humans' perceptions of the animals, which we are animals, but we forget that so easily, and ourselves, who we like to think are so special and different in so many ways. They're kind of halfway in between, and I think that's part of the draw of them for us. It's a reminder, perhaps, of what we've lost or of what we were. And it reconnects us in a way, and I think that is part of the coolness of the whole subject.
Okay, Cliff, and so has there been, and I think maybe we've asked you last time when you were on, but has there been actual authentic footage of, and not blurry, but actually really good footage of Bigfoot?
Yeah, I think there's quite a few pieces of authentic footage of Sasquatches. Of course, the Patterson-Gimlin film people claim that it's blurry, but it's not, because it actually has an infinite focus lens on it. Everything in the frame is not blurry, except for the movement, of course. When things move on film, there is some blur there. But, yeah, so the Patterson-Gimlin film is 100% authentic, and it's just a matter of learning about the footage and the circumstances to figure that one out. I would recommend people who have any doubt about that, the authenticity of the footage, to read a book called When Roger Met Patty by a guy named Bill Munns, who's a special effects, you know, creature maker sort of guy in Hollywood. And I was actually working in the industry in 1967 when the footage was obtained. And he went into the study of the film thinking that, okay, this thing's nonsense. I'm going to prove it. But after a decade of studying it, he came to the conclusions like, this isn't fake. This could not have been done with the technology of the day. And he goes on and on and on. And he really solidifies the fact that he does great science on it too, by the way, for the people who are interested in science and reproducing results and stuff. He does a fantastic job at explaining exactly why this stuff is real and cannot be faked, even though he went into the study assuming it was. That's a great piece of footage. There's some other stuff out there, like the Stacy Brown footage from Florida is excellent. It's a thermal imaging video of a Sasquatch standing between two trees. I have an in-depth analysis of it. Yeah, well, you can see that one, or the best parts of it, on my website. Stacy and his father, whose name is also Stacy, a father and son team went out there and got it. And they got it, I think, in May, if I remember right. I could be wrong about that because my memory's a little fuzzy. I only have so much RAM, you know. But and they sat on the thing from, like, May until August. And then they called me, and I had never even heard of the footage because he hadn't released it. And they said, Cliff, we've been sitting on this. We don't know what to do with it. Can you help? And I, yeah, of course, I'd love to help. And it turns out that the analysis that I've done using measurements from the sighting location, I've been there, indicate this thing is about between 7.5 and 8 feet tall, most likely. And there's a number of things about it that I'm confident make it a Sasquatch. So you can see that on my website, cliffberrickman.com. It's under the research tab. There's some other pieces of footage that haven't really been studied as deeply, but I have a gut feeling are real. There's a really intriguing piece of footage from Mississippi that I like a lot. A hunter apparently came across one of these things tearing into a log. And to my knowledge, it hasn't been debunked. I'm inclined to think that one's real. What else? Oh, there's a couple interesting shots on game camera that I think are worthy of mention. There's one from Vermont called the Vermont Trail Cam video or footage. I think that's legitimate. And of course, I've also done an analysis of that footage as well. It's on my website, and you can go read why I think it's real. But yeah, people do in fact film these things, and game cameras do in fact pick these things up every once in a while. It's not unheard of, and sure, sometimes they're blurry, but think about it. At nighttime, when these are most active and where a lot of these photographs are taken, or when a lot of these photographs are taken, the shutter of the camera stays open longer, therefore increasing the probability of blur. So, yeah, it does make sense that a lot of these are kind of blurry because of low light conditions and whatnot. But, yeah, there's a good deal of footage that seems to be legitimate, that is very impressive when you get into studying them.
Wow, that sounds interesting. Well, after the show, I will be checking that out for sure. What about
you,
Jason?
Oh, yeah, me too. I'm always interested to see footage. I don't think I've ever seen any of the ones that you mentioned. But I'm looking. We only got a few minutes left, and I know you mentioned your website. Do you want to mention it again?
Oh, yeah, it's cliffberrickman.com. If you have trouble spelling my name, if you just Google the words Cliff and Bigfoot, I'm sure it'll come up. It's not I'm not hard to find. And it has my research. It has some vocalizations I've recorded. It has a footprint cast database. You can sign up to go on an expedition with me. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff that you can do on the website. So check it out. I think it's a pretty good one. I don't have a lot of sighting reports and stuff. I leave that to the BFRO because they do a good job at it and stuff. That's Matt's group. So I leave all that stuff to them. But you find more in-depth research and analyses of various pieces of evidence on my website. That's kind of what I like to do. I leave the sighting reports, even though I do solicit sighting reports. If you've seen a Bigfoot, I'd love to hear about it. But I don't post them publicly or anything like that. It's just for my own internal use.
Well, if I ever run into one, you're going to be the first on the list of the persons I'm calling.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. And the sooner the better. If it's, you know, within a couple of days, maybe I can get out there and find some footprints or something.
That's what I was thinking, too. I was along that line. Hey, if you find some footprints, you can go take some snapshots and tell you about it so you can go and check it out.
Absolutely. Yeah, cast it, too. By all means, cast it. Obtain the evidence so it can be duplicated and entered into the data set.
How do you cast it? How do you do that?
You basically mix up plaster and then you pour it in. It's really that simple. You know, you could get as technical as you want about it and talk about splatter casting techniques and whatever and mixture ratios. But the fact is, if you're out there in the woods and you're faced with a footprint in the ground, do everything you can to get it, which means mix up plaster, pour it in, wait around, pull it out. It's that simple. The very basis of it all. Be patient, do a good job, document everything you can, take photographs, cast it. And let
document,
me know as soon as possible. Yeah.
You never document something too much. So, well, it looks like we're out of time, Cliff. I want to thank you for coming on the show again tonight and educating us on Bigfoot. It's always fun.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'd love to talk Squatch, and clearly I have a lot to ramble on and say. So, yeah, I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, thank
you. You're
very
knowledgeable.
I appreciate your time, and, you know, it's getting late, but, you know, good thing it's only an hour, but we really, really appreciate you coming out and sharing with our listeners about Bigfoot and hopefully opening up their horizons, and they do exist. I know that they do. It's just I've never had a personal confrontation or anything like that, but, you know, you never know. You just, you know, keep your eyes and your heart open. You never know what you're going to run across.
Yeah, and they are, in fact, real. They're perfectly normal biological things, and I just want people to be aware that they're out there and have some level of compassion for them. So, again, thank you for letting me come on and do my little education spiel about the subject.
Take care. Thanks a lot. We'll see you in August. Maybe Jason might show up. I'm going to be there, but maybe Jason might show up and introduce him personally. So hopefully he will be out in August.
That'd be great. Yeah, I think we're probably talking about the Oregon Bigfoot Festival in Troutdale. Yeah, it's going to be a great gig. There's a bunch of stuff happening. I have a calendar on my website you can check out as well, so where I'm going to be appearing soon.
That's going to be wonderful.
Very cool.
Yay. Okay. Thank you so much.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Cliff. You too. All
okay.
Right, Sherry.
We'll... Next week, we're going to have back a returning guest, and I'm looking forward to talking to her, Andrea Perrone. She's the older sibling of the Conjuring, of the Perrone family. The original movie, 1, 2, and 3, it's about the true story of their family. So the older sibling, Andrea, has been our guest many times, so you're going to have her back. But this time, we're going to talk about her own movie that's in progress. It's called House of Darkness, House of Light. And it is actually, I believe it is The Conjuring, but it's in her own take of actually what happened. So instead of the Hollywoodish version of The Conjuring, she's in the midst of her own version of what happened to her family out in Rhode Island, I believe. And it's going to be called House of Darkness, House of Light. So we're going to have Andrea back and talk about what the progress of her movie is. And we'll just go from there, and we talk about UFOs or Bigfoot or whatever. We're just going to kind of go with the flow of things.
I'm excited about that because, you know, Hollywood always does their thing to movies, you know, to make them scarier. And I've always wanted to just see a movie, and maybe they're out there and maybe I have, but I've always wanted to see a movie that was, you know, accurate, like not embellished, not anything like that, you know.
You remember what Andrea said that, you know, in actuality, what was it, 3% of, or maybe, and I think it's either 3 or 10%, I could be wrong, but no more than 10% of what actually happened in The Conjuring really happened in the family. And she said the movie made it look like child's play compared to what the horror that the family, every day that they went through. They glamorized it, but it was very horrific and very traumatizing and everything. And, you know, she's going to share that. So
that's exciting. I know she's a really busy lady, and she's such a nice, gentle soul. So I'm excited to get her back on next week.
She's a wise soul, and it's always a pleasure to have her. She's a sweetheart. So, and then in 2 weeks from now, we're going to have Karen Anderson back. She's going to talk about animal communication. So basically, how to communicate with your animals and what we can do to help our our skills in helping to communicate just not only other people's animals, but our animals. So that's going to be looking forward to that too also.
Very cool. Well, unless you have anything else, Cher, I guess we'll wrap it up. I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll be back next week, 8 p.m. on Sunday. And hope everybody has a fantastic and safe week.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for your support, and thank you for just listening to us. We appreciate it. Take care. Peace.
Good night, everyone.